Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, counselor, and marriage and family therapist. Our topic this evening is coping with COVID-19. I invite our listeners to call in with their comments and questions. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. This evening, we have two guests from Louisiana State University Shreveport. We have Dr. Paula Atkins. She is the Associate Vice Chancellor of Student Development and Dean of Students. We also have Angie Pellegrin. She is a licensed professional counselor and the Director of Counseling Services. So ladies, I'd like to talk to you tonight about COVID. We're gonna cover a bunch of different areas, so just hold on and stay with me. So Dr. Atkins, I wanted to start with you. Tell us about what you do at LSU Shreveport and a little bit about how your job has changed during the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, thank you, Dr. Visconti, for having us on. This is an important topic for our students and for the community. As you said, I am the Dean of Students, the Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Development at LSU Shreveport. What that means is I have the privilege of working with a group of dedicated professionals that help students develop outside of the classroom so that they are holistic, self-sufficient individuals when they leave our campus. And it's very rewarding work, and I love doing it. My job has changed a little bit during this time. I think primarily what everybody can relate to with the distance, not being able to see, interact directly with students has impacted how I view them and my responses to them, because with distance, it just creates a completely different kind of environment or intuition. But on the positive side, I have gotten to understand what their experience is like with the trouble with this technology. When they present some issue, I have experienced it now with the systems going down, lack of internet, things not going through. I certainly have gained a student perspective with the challenges technology has given us. So those are two ways that my job has changed, one in a positive way, one in a not so positive way.
And you are part of the coronavirus task force at LSUS. Yes. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Chancellor Clark developed the task force to organize the university response to this pandemic. So he gathered a group of individuals from across campus, faculty and staff, and their charge is to make recommendations to the administration with the focus of keeping the campus safe. So we want students, faculty, staff, to public to be safe on the campus. So it started there. And then as we have moved completely off campus, of course, now our charge is to how do we safely return to campus? What are the guidelines? What are the capacity of rooms for classes in the academic area? How do we hold student events and keep students safe? How do we socially or physically distance, but still get students to engage and interact? So the task force is instrumental on making those recommendations to the administration.
And Angie, tell us what you do as the Director of Counseling Services and a little bit about how your job has changed during this pandemic.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Repeat what Dr. Atkins just said. We are grateful to be able to speak on these important issues. So as Director of Counseling Services, I'm a licensed professional counselor. We have another counselor, Kendall Riddell, who is licensed as well. We serve all the currently enrolled students who might be struggling and reach out for mental health reasons, often anxiety and depression, relationship issues. Those are probably the biggest things we deal with, but a lot of it is adjustment to college and the transition and the stress that comes along with that. Identity development, everything you can imagine at the traditional college age, but then also we deal with a lot of non-traditional students as well who may be parents, all of those things to support the students' goals, long-term goals, short-term goals as well, to eventually, as Dean Atkins mentioned, hopefully see them walk across the stage one day and feeling good about themselves and proud of what they accomplished. And it's, as she said, a very rewarding part of our job is to see them accomplish those goals. How it has changed since COVID-19 entered our world. I mean, there's the personal changes of having to work remotely. I've been exactly 3 months. I have not stepped on campus since March 17th. So that's a big thing, getting the home office set up, trying to figure out how to serve our students remotely. As you know, as a counselor as well, having to do telehealth, that I had done a few sessions here or there over the phone before, but this is how we've had to do it since 3 months ago, solely through telehealth. And so that's a lot of learning and obstacles. As Dean Atkins mentioned, some of the technology issues as well. I don't feel like I'm as strong in the telehealth as I was in person, but I'm learning that. So there's been a lot of changes there. And as Dean Atkins also said, how we're responding to students, how are they contacting us? They're reaching out to try to make sure students know that we are still available to them. It's been it's crisis management, but it's worry about them too. And if they're not reaching out, that's a whole different big picture of what's going on in their home world and thinking about they had to move to back in with their parents, or did they lose a job, or can they focus on school right now? So it's a big difference in how we address what they are potentially dealing with, because we are able to know that we're dealing with at home too. The stress that we have working remotely is maybe tenfold for them when they're trying to also complete coursework and things like that. So it's changed a lot.
So just as we have all had to get used to working from home, a lot of other people have had to make that adjustment. What are some of the obstacles that both workers and students are having to deal with as far as that adjustment to instead of being in the workplace or the classroom, being at home?
Well, for me, one, I think the shakeup in routine. When we first started working remotely, it's easy to get out of a routine and to sleep in a little more, maybe to not shower at the same time, if at all for some people. it's easy to not get motivated to get up and go. So adjusting to knowing that I needed to establish a routine to find that balance of when do I leave work when I'm at home working, having to have like a ritual to create of, okay, I leave and walk my dog and now I'm back home and not at work, So I think our students are dealing with the same things, and it can really impact them with their sleep habits and everything else. So that's the biggest shakeup for me, is just when you don't have to get up and go somewhere and be somewhere, you still have to establish some routine. And that's a bit of predictability in a very unpredictable time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And also what I've heard from students and faculty and staff is that the increase in distractions in the home environment. Many of our students are also parents, and so their children are at home as well, being homeschooled. And so being able to juggle all of those distractions and stay focused on your individual tasks, whether that's a work task or your school task, has been a real challenge for many of our students. Because they're, like Angie said, non-traditional students. And so they have those multiple responsibilities. And that has been a difficulty. The other one we've talked about already, but is technology. We have a digital divide in our community. So they're not all students had equal access to technology to do their homework assignments or other schoolwork via the internet. So getting over that hurdle was a significant hurdle for some students.
Are there any suggestions or recommendations that y'all have made to students or maybe coworkers, faculty, routine? Any other suggestions or recommendations that y'all have made to try to get into this new way of working and functioning?
Setting structure. to do structure, get and stick how this is honoring like we get some things a long way.
I also we've done a couple of student forums via Zoom during that second half of the semester when after campus closed. We stayed in touch with students and we wanted them to voice what was going on and to just have that supportive community and to talk about what is working and what is not, what are you struggling with, and sharing strategies that different people have found. One of the biggest things I think a lot of what I have told students is to moderate that news consumption. You know, if it's an hour a day in the morning and that's it, whatever your structure is there. And I think we had a student forum where I compared it to food consumption. Cake is great, but if you eat it all day, every day, it's not healthy. So the consumption of anything in moderation, we have to be conscious of. And so for students to not focus on so much negativity and their social media stuff too, it's good to be informed, but be careful what you're exposing yourself to, because that's part of our self-care.
Yeah, and I would even add to that, certainly minimizing how much you are exposed to the news and the negativity, but intentionally exposing yourself to other kinds of things that balance that out, what's good happening in the world, volunteering where you can, so you get that balance and it's not all negative all the time.
So any suggestions or recommendations as far as trying to keep that work-life balance right now? I find it a little bit easier when I'm at the office. I don't have those things at home, those things that I need to be doing quite as immediate. You know, I can look over and see those dishes or maybe those clothes need to be folded, or you can hear the children, or, you know, and so being at home, it is kind of difficult to find that balance. Any suggestions or recommendations of finding balance during this time?
I do think, and we have already talked about structure and routine, and at the same time, building regular breaks in is going to be important. I am able to walk outside every couple of hours, or even every hour, just for a few minutes. Getting up from your desk, getting some fresh air, getting outside is a really healthy thing. So making regular breaks a part of your structure is definitely important, but also giving yourself a break, being self-compassionate, that if you get distracted or you can't seem to focus or you have all these things going on and you're not really producing as at the level that you were in a normal situation, whatever normal is, that's to be expected, and to not beat yourself up about that. I think we're all dealing with that. And I do think and hope that our faculty members understand that too. Because they've had to deal with it themselves. All of our staff, I know I'm not as productive at home, and the first few weeks made it so frustrating. But just take a few deep breaths and get back into it. You know, that's we have to be realistic about what the situation is.
Manage those expectations, absolutely.
Yeah, because anytime that there's a lot of change going on, that productivity is going to go down. It's just going to be a little more difficult. And I think that what you said about self-compassion is really, really important. Give yourself a little bit of a break. It's expected that your productivity is not going to be quite as great when things are so different.
Yeah, and on the flip side, I've also heard that when we're working from home, that's all we're doing. And relationships at home and duties at home tend to fall off as well, or could. So as Angie's mentioned, maintaining that balance so that neither the workspace or the home space gets neglected, and to be realistic about how much you can divide between those two things.
Yeah, and two, I think, as you mentioned, some of our students have children, our faculty mm-hmm. and staff as well. They're going through this too, trying to understand all these changes. And there's, you know, a lot of anger and irritability and frustrations and just boredom and all of that. So part of that sort of commitment that you have with your family even is building into the routine, the family time. Like, I'm going to go walk with my children at such and such time every day if the weather permits, you know. And those children need that too. And I don't care what their ages are. They need you need a model for your children taking the break and focusing and getting out and doing other things. And I don't know about any of you, but I have seen a whole lot of walking going on since this started. And I imagine the athletic shoes and things in the retail department have gone up, because it's a beautiful thing to see families walking.
So as we've already talked about a little bit, a lot of change has gone on in the last few months, not only with coronavirus, but just because of COVID, a lot of financial changes and uncertainty, and medical changes and uncertainty, and then just in the world in general, civil changes and uncertainty. How can we prepare ourselves to cope with these rapid changes? How do we adjust to them? What can we do to deal with all everything that's going on?
Well, I think there has to be a recognition that there's a difference between coping with the situation and controlling the situation, and to increase our awareness that we can't control everything that's going on around us. We can only, as trite as it sounds, control our response to it, and to keep our focus there. And when we keep our focus on what we can control and what is within our ability, stress tends to go down. It's unreasonable to think that we can appropriately respond to absolutely everything that's happening in the world, because it's like a fire hose, I've heard, you know, it's just coming at you all the time. So focus on what you can control and really your response to what's going on. I think the other thing that I would comment on there is that you've got to be flexible and maintain those expectations. If I have a rigid belief of how this is supposed to turn out, I'm likely going to be disappointed. So I have to have that cognitive flexibility to understand there's multiple ways that a situation can turn out that are okay. It just may not be my preference. and so to be able to accept that, I think is a good strategy.
Yeah, I think the idea of control, well, first of all, humans don't do change very well. And certainly these unexpected, unplanned for changes that change minute to minute, and the unpredictability of where we're going to be in next week, next month, in the fall semester for us, we're, you know, thinking about. But the idea of control, I do think that people have a tendency to try to start controlling other things in a hyper control way when they can't control things. And it sometimes comes out in your relationships, you know, how with anger and stuff, when people are feeling powerless, that lack of control can come out in a variety of ways, and that feeling of powerless people don't necessarily respond to very well. But, you know, there's one phrase that I've heard that I think about in these moments is that the opposite of control is trust. You know, on one level, trusting yourself, like what you said, Dean Atkins, what can you control? What is within your control? I can control turning the news off. I can control if I'm physically capable walking outside of, you know, getting away from the desk, or there's a lot that we can control. But also that trust, I think, is built into our leadership. I mean, I'm thinking right now, I really feel very fortunate to work for an organization with leadership that is responsive and listens and communicates, is transparent on every, and even transparent on the, like, we don't know, you know, something. And we can't know right now, but the listening, the empathy that has gone into our leadership team and the coronavirus task force as well, to work for an organization that puts in their charge the responsibilities that they have for these students, of course, but also the faculty and staff and all that we are going through. Being able to step back and say, I can trust that these people are doing what's in the best interest of all of us, this whole community, campus community and beyond, and just take a few deep breaths and know that that is happening. And I don't have to really think about what I can control in this whole uncontrollable mess that we're in right now.
So it's not as if the world was perfect before all of this happened. You know, people dealt with stressors and changes, and life was not perfect. But for a lot of people that were struggling before the pandemic, this has really been an added stressor. Would y'all mind talking more about that? The added stress that, you know, people maybe that were already struggling, that they are under.
You know what I've noticed with students that I've worked with people I've talked to, myself included, if you already struggled with anxiety, it was likely exacerbated in these moments. If you already struggled with depression, it's maybe intensified right now too. And it's also, I think, can be a little, I'm going to use the word triggering, but that might not be the best fit for this, what I'm trying to describe. But I do think that the idea of loss and grief that we're dealing with, the feeling of loss of your connection to your friends, to the meaning you get out of going to work every day, and feeling productive, maybe those connections with people at work, the loss of all the rituals and, like, for us, the graduation ceremonies for, you know, for students. I think those losses can also kind of bring back old losses too. And the intensity that we feel might be a little more than we expected. You know, I think, why am I struggling this much? You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about the mood swings that they're feeling within the span of maybe 10 minutes. You can go from laughing to angry to crying, you know, the mood swings that I'm hearing people talk about, colleagues as well. I mean, it's unexpected, and people are kind of at a loss of their own emotional response to this. And it's not normal. It's not, you know, typical response that they're having. Everything in your world right now is upside down for the most part, except for what you can hold on to. And every feeling that you have because of all the changes going on has really been intensified for a lot of people. And it's confusing them too. And the responses is often unexpected and even out of character for some people too.
I would agree with that. I think for our students, some of that is intensified when things that they had planned and worked for so long, things that they felt like they had control over, then they didn't. And you mentioned the graduation ceremony, or a job being offer being rescinded, or an internship where they were going to get some wonderful experience for post-graduation has been canceled. So it's certainly loss or grief, but it's also, to me, kind of a sense of loss of direction, or loss of hope for the future, because they don't know what they had worked so hard for is now not there. No fault of their own. And that's got to be impactful.
Any suggestions in dealing with the sense of loss, the grief, the disappointment that a lot of people are feeling right now, especially, you know, being cut off some people from support systems? Any suggestions for people dealing with, like I said, the loss, the grief, the disappointment?
Well, and again, I know it sounds hollow when we're talking about these things, but I don't think that we have to be cut off from our support systems. They look different. But I think that they can still be there, and it does take a little bit of an extra effort to stay connected. But I think that's certainly a possibility. The good thing about, I hate to call it the good thing, but the silver lining to that is I think many of us can relate to how others are feeling now, maybe more so than in previous situations. We all have a similar experience. And so that might be easier to share and find support from. But I don't think we're really cut off from our support system. They just look different.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are certainly ways to stay connected with our technology today. It's not quite the same, but remembering that we can do Zoom or FaceTime. My parents are in their 70s, and for the first time, my mom has figured out how to use the FaceTime on her phone, and I haven't visited them because, again, they're in their 70s, and my dad's diabetic, so I want to be, and they live in about 2 hours away, so they have learned FaceTime. And I have to think too, even though we have been through so many changes and stressors and disappointments, there have been some perks to, I now know Zoom pretty darn well. And it's certainly going to change the landscape of higher education, and kind of move us forward at a faster pace than we anticipated with technology. But I think also this has been a time to really figure out what is important to you, and all the distractions that we did in our normal, we had in our normal day-to-day worlds, let us go back to those values that maybe our modern world has caused us to forget a little bit. And to think about the meaningful parts and the purpose that you have in the world with the solitude. I mean, it can be too much. Isolation has its benefits, but we can have, certainly downside to that. But it's been an opportunity to revisit some things. And that's, I have to say, if this is going to happen, I'm going to get something out of it.
Good for you.
So with things, all the changes and things can feel like a bit of a whirlwind. How do we stay grounded? Any suggestions on staying grounded with everything that's going on?
Well, I think some of those reminders of that there will be an end, to keep our focus not in so much in the here and now, but there will be an end. And Angie alluded to this earlier, but I think it is wonderfully grounding to stay connected to Mother Nature and our world, to get outside and to experience something that's not so technological and not so in your face as that computer screen can be. And to really breathe in the air and get some exercise, I think that can be wonderfully grounding and can help us refocus away from all of those stressors to maybe where we want that that thought pattern to go.
Yeah, to what you're saying about Mother Nature, a lot of people right now aren't able to touch another person. So even if you have a garden, touching the plants, obviously if you have pets too, anything that's body oriented. So physical touch, but also breathing and, meditation and mindfulness and really deep breathing can get you back in touch with your body and in the present, because anxiety is all about thinking about the future and depression is more thinking about the past. That's kind of the sort of cliche, simplistic way of looking at that. So if you can get back in touch with your physical surroundings via touch and breathing and that mindfulness exercises, smells, that will be very, very grounding. I'm a big believer in essential oils. So there are certain scents that are grounding, like woodsy scents, patchouli and sandalwood. Rosemary is a great one, just very much getting you back in touch with your physical presence. And that's literally grounding.
I invite our listeners to join our conversation. Call with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. Mindfulness, I think, is a wonderful tool. Would you all mind talking a little bit more about mindfulness and give some, maybe a few quick tips on how to practice mindfulness?
Certainly. There's definitely a lot of apps out there that you could download onto your phone. YouTube as well has videos, and you can do something for 5 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour. You can do just music, or you can have a guided visualization where a soothing voice brings you on a journey somewhere. And it really helps you get things out of your, to release some emotions in a way that maybe talking doesn't do, or, exercise. Now, there's some people with exercise, like running, there's the runner's high. I think some people get kind of a similar sensation in terms of being able to process some things. But, and if there's no particular belief system involved, you can just kind of get back in touch with who you are and release some things. I think anyone can do it, barring any disability, for the most part. And there's so much free stuff out there. It's really great to do. It'd be a good practice for someone with their children at home to practice being present for 5 minutes. You know, that would be a good routine to have.
So I've had a few people mention COVID-19, but 19 as in 19 pounds that they have gained since they have been in quarantine. So, we're at home, we have more access to the refrigerator. Any suggestions about exercising and eating right? That can do so much for our mood, but it's really difficult. Would you talk a little bit about the benefits of exercising and eating healthy, and give us some tips on how to maintain that during this time?
Well, I'm probably not the expert in exercising to answer this question, but I can certainly relate to being sedentary, and when a difficult task comes across the computer desk or your work email, that is a natural, response is to go feel better with food. So I think purposefully putting in other kinds of things, acknowledging that there are going to be difficult and stressful tasks while you're at home, and intentionally setting up things that are contrary to walking to the refrigerator. And that might be, I don't know, the placement of your office area or other kinds of things, but to make it an intentional practice to engage in other kinds of behavior, to break that constant going to the comfort food.
I think one way I tried to do this at the beginning of working remotely is I put a timer on my phone at 10, 12, and 2. And at 10, I was supposed to do 1 minute of lunges. And at 12, I was supposed to do 1 minute of squats. And at 2, I think I was supposed to do abs, which I never got to. I started ignoring these little timers that I set, but they worked in the short term for me. I never was able to really make that a habit. But the habit I have established, and it's part of what has helped me with the work-life balance when I'm working from home, is I shut down at a certain time and I go for a walk for like an hour or so. And that's been, gratefully, we've had some good weather where it's not the cold part of winter that we're in. Of course, now it's hot, but going at a certain time later is good. That's become part of my necessary routine to have structure in my life, and it's been a really great one for me that I enjoy, because I'm also getting in nature when I do it too. So whatever reward system you can get in there, I mean, I like, you know, I need the vitamin D too, so all of that's a good feeling. You know, the food thing, I know a lot of people struggle with. I've also heard someone call it the pandemic pudge, is what they're talking about. I started out with, I didn't know it was going to be this long. So I'm like, oh, a couple of frozen pizzas, some canned soup, some frozen corn dogs. And then I did. I think I gained some weight at the beginning. And I thought, okay, I can't do this. I can't maintain that. So I started eating healthier. I have a garden, so I was able to make salads every day for the first month or two. And then also now the week we closed, I bought tomato plants, and now I'm running through with all these tomatoes. So I've got a lot of healthy food that I don't have to go to the store for. So that's nice. But I think part of the structure and the schedule and the reward system, however you're going to reward yourself, the regular breaks. But nutrition is a big factor in our mental health too. Processed foods and sugar and alcohol and all of that can impact us. And I have discovered recently, I was struggling with some sleep issues. And if I don't eat something sweet late at night, I sleep well. But if I eat something sweet, I can't sleep. And I think that's not just me. I think I've read something on that. So that just learning what not to do for your own well-being is important too. But that's what I've learned.
I invite our listeners to join our conversation call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So some people are starting to return to work, and that can be a little anxiety provoking for folks. Any suggestions as to how to cope with these feelings of anxiety for people who might be starting to venture out and return to work?
That's a very difficult question, because in a large organization like LSU Shreveport, we have a lot of different responses to returning to work. And so it's challenging for the organization to be responsive, not knowing everyone's story. So it is a real challenge. But I do think I'm going to go back to an increase in awareness of what we can control and what we cannot control. A lack of control tends to increase, or a feeling of lack of control tends to increase in anxiety. So if we can work to moderate that, be more comfortable with uncertainty, because there are a lot of things that we just can't answer right now about how this is going to turn out. We can give broad guidelines about how to be safe on campus or in any work environment for that matter, but we're going to have to modify that to the individual circumstances. And some people are more comfortable with that uncertainty than others. So I appreciate Angie's response that LSU Shreveport has been open and supportive in that manner. And I think what we've done is be as transparent as we can in our communication. We set up weekly Zoom meetings with faculty and staff. So I think keeping that communication open has been very, very useful for them. And just knowing, even if it's knowing that I don't have a specific answer, does decrease those anxieties.
And I'll add to that, I think we have to expect that it's going to be an adjustment, a transition, and to acclimate. The leadership is allowing us to gradually reacclimate to returning to campus in the phases that we are. But I know it was such a struggle adjusting to working from home and the isolation. And just as that occurred, while I want part of my old life back, and parts maybe not that I know that I can change, that it needed to change, I'm going to give myself a break again and have that self-compassion that it's going to be an adjustment going back. And if whether it's a fear or anxiety about contracting something, there are precautions that people can take, you know, and trying to be safe. And for us in the work environments, it's being set up to to practice all the safety precautions that we can. But also knowing that I just have to adjust again to being in the world around people and having to engage with people when I sort of haven't. And just to expect that, Dean Atkins has mentioned, it's the expectations. So don't expect it to be all back to the same thing it was. And that's all you can do is accept that. And that's easier said than done, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're ever gonna have a normal again. And so adjusting to that now may be a good strategy.
Mm-hmm. And so what about medication? Do y'all find that more people are turning to medication? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I have read through all the literature and all the, organizations that I'm involved in, that a lot of people are either newly taking anti-anxiety or antidepressant medication since all this occurred. My guess is that maybe they were already struggling beforehand, and this was the, straw that broke the camel's back for them, that they decided to make that decision. And, that might be the right decision for that person. It's a personal decision, but it is very telling. There's a lot that we have seen, not just in the field that we're in, but there's an increase in alcohol sales, right? So there's an increase in the medication. There's an increase in, I think I've heard that you can't buy a lot of fitness equipment. You can't get a yoga mat anywhere or dumbbells or, so I think different people have different ways of coping, and we are seeing that on a whole continuum of how people are coping. I've heard that. We don't deal with that so much on the college campus, but it's been in the literature that I've seen in the news articles and things like that.
I invite our listeners to join our conversation. Call with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. Let's talk a little bit about spirituality and how that can affect our well-being.
I think, in terms of spirituality, it depends on a person's belief system, but for one person, it could be nature, getting out and going for walks, reconnecting with a sense of purpose and meaning, our common humanity, that we're all in this together and struggling in similar ways, even if we have different stories. But for some people, relying on some religious belief system, I've seen some churches do like Zoom meetings too, so they're staying connected in the ways that they need to. That's part of someone's support system too. It can be what people fall back or fall on to supporting in hard times. So if that works for some people, everyone has a different way of dealing with it. But I think it all comes down to that bigger meaning and connection that we have to something bigger than ourselves. So I think of that common sense of humanity, that we're all in this together.
So a lot of the students around the country have moved from the classroom to online instruction. What are some of the struggles that y'all seen that that folks are having, and any suggestions?
I've seen two main issues in students that students are reporting. The first one is just general technology or lack of access to technology. Again, the digital divide is huge and affects students of color much more than it does the other students on campus, in that they don't have access either to a internet service or to the devices that they need. Or the devices that they have don't have the software that they need, which was located on campus. So just access to technology has been an issue with students moving to the online environment. The second issue that I've seen with students transitioning to online is that somewhat what we've already talked about, adjusting to that self-discipline. In the classroom environment, you can go in, you've got reminders from other students, you have maybe reminders from the instructor. There's a different pace of learning in the face-to-face classes. In transitioning to online, it's much more student driven. And so the motivation has to be there, the discipline has to be there, the independence skills have to be there. And some of our students struggle with that in general, but in this new environment, it's even been more difficult for them to create that kind of focus and self-discipline. So those are really the two issues that I saw in transitioning. And you may have seen others.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the self-discipline part, bar none, I think can impact the students in so many emotional ways too. A lot of them I saw, we had a lot of students, I think just kind of, we don't know what happened. They stopped doing work. And whether you contact them, you just don't hear back. And then you would hear back right before finals. So I think what happens, and I've seen this before COVID, so I think it just exacerbated it. There's a tendency for many students to, obviously procrastination is a factor, but I do think when they are highly stressed or plagued by any kind of fear or anxiety, there can be a tendency, and this is just a human tendency, but it's often in students, I see it a lot, to avoid dealing with it, to like keep their heads buried in the sand until you realize, uh-oh, I've got to do something, and they don't have enough time to complete the tasks or the homework assignments that they didn't do during that time. So I think it was definitely a major stress response, but we also don't know what was going on with their home life. Maybe they had to move back to their parents or lost a job or had to support some siblings or their own children or work, you know, at home teaching their children. So there's a lot of factors that we don't necessarily know, but that stress response of just avoiding dealing with it and hoping it will all go away and resolve itself miraculously, I think has been what I've seen a lot.
And we have a listener question or comment. We have John from Fishville. John, you can go right ahead with your question or comment.
Okay, this is a little off subject, but I have a large family, 49 people come to Christmas dinner. And right now, they're all, like you guys have been talking about, I got about 8 students. But the bottom line, the final comment I have for my family is, come on, look for the bright side to what your problem might be. There's always a bright side, so that has to be kind of stressed when you don't know the answer to the problem. Just look for the bright side, and if you think about it like that, boy, it makes it a lot easier.
It absolutely does. I appreciate that comment. And it tends to also help your viewpoint in looking at a lot of other things. You know, it tends to be contagious and it creates that positive filter. Absolutely. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I agree. We all kind of, at least in the mental health field, know how important within positive psychology, like gratitude exercises, what 3 things I'm grateful for, or acts of appreciation, letting someone know that you appreciate something about them. 3 good things that happened today before you go to bed. Keeping that in check is really important. I do think that some people struggle with that, and especially in moments like this, if someone struggling with depression, there can be a resistance to that. Sometimes we can get into a downward spiral where, you know, there's maybe even a sense of, you know, self-pity or self-righteousness that people can struggle with and refuse to look at the bright side. And it is a choice, but it's not so easy for some people who are really in a severe depression too. And the social support is a big factor. So I appreciate John's talking about how many people he has there. Having those people around, while it can probably be annoying at times and there's no space and there's a lot more mess in the home, and I've heard that a lot. People can't keep their homes clean right now. But why do you have a mess in your house? You know, you've got people there that you care about that are with you, and you have this support system. So sometimes if they leave after COVID and you've been quarantining together, you're going to miss this dirty socks on the floor or whatever it is about a person. So seeing even the bright side of our irritations, it's a good thing. But the social connections and focusing on what even the most annoying things that we have going on mean at the core, if someone's around or, yeah, it's really good.
So we talked some about the struggles that some students are having adjusting to online learning. What has the administration at LSUS tried to do to help resolve some of those issues?
Well, from the administration standpoint, we've done a number of things. When the crisis first started, we worked really hard to keep the campus-wide lab open. That's where students who did not have access to technology could come to campus and do any coursework. Unfortunately, we had to close that, but we also stepped up to the plate and created an internet accessible parking lot so students could still access our Moodle or our learning management system, email to faculty and other students. They could still do that from the campus. But outside of that, we've created some trainings for faculty, because teaching in an online environment is different than teaching in a face-to-face environment. And so teaching some different skills and pedagogy that they can transition their teaching strategies has been helpful. We're looking at developing a laptop loaner program for students. So if they don't have a laptop, we can loan them one for the semester. They can do their work and then they can return that to the university. And I'll let Angie talk about some of the support services, but they have gone uninterrupted. So while there have been some classroom resolutions, we have also continued supporting students outside the classroom in a variety of ways.
Yes, just to kind of tail on to what Dean Atkins said, I'm in counseling services, so we had four of us, I don't know the caseload of students that we were working with, we contacted, let them know what's going on. So we had a lot of them continue, but several took a break because they had to focus on other things. But we have not gone a single day without continuing to offer services to our students, just in a different way. But the career services, our academic support in the Student Success Center, all of that is continued without any interruptions. Thankfully to our IT department, who has helped us with our access on campus, remote access. So that's been really a really great thing. We are still here for them.
And actually we've learned some lessons in having to look at the virtual environment. So we've done some programming that we probably wouldn't have done before. And I think in doing that have reached additional students in some respects. Some like our online students, we have a huge online population. I mean, that are intentionally online, not that had to transition to online. And we, I think, have been able to reach them even more readily through some of the programming that we've done intentionally virtually.
And I will add, it hasn't started yet, but starting next year, I think this situation has allowed this to occur. We're going to be offering an online platform too that will help students with self-help for depression and anxiety and relationship conflicts. And it will also be available to all faculty and staff, as well as students, including out-of-state students, where we have jurisdiction limitations as licensed counselors in the state of Louisiana, we'll be able to offer support to those out-of-state students within the bounds of our limitations. So that's a really exciting time for us, too, to be moving forward in our technology ability to help serve students.
So one of the big questions right now is what will school look like in the future? Any ideas as to how education, what that's going to look like in the school year to come and in the future?
Oh, lots of ideas, no answers. but it will, I think, look very different than our traditional campuses have looked in the past. We are dedicated this fall, like many institutions, to returning to full face-to-face, but there will be differences. We will have to be much more technologically responsive in engaging students that way. We're going to have to change pedagogy so that we are reaching students in the virtual classroom in a meaningful way. So it's not just self-taught and that there is true engagement with the students. Our student activities or engagement, campus engagement is going to have to change as well. And I'm not sure what all that's going to look like. It's still a work in progress, but it will look different. Absolutely. It will look different.
So ladies, we have just a few minutes left. Any last recommendations or suggestions to workers, to students, to folks in general regarding coping with all the changes and everything that's going on right now?
Well, I did have a thought that popped up after caller John's call, and we talked about, you know, staying optimistic. That concept that I mentioned earlier about the opposite of control is trust. It makes me think of the difference between optimism and hope. And optimism is like looking on the bright side of things and seeing the positive in things. But hope is knowing that things will get better and that we have it in us the capability to make that change happen. So trusting that we are capable, not just individually, but we are individually, but also as a group, as a campus community, certainly as a bigger community, to make things happen that need to happen to make that future better, whatever it looks like. It's within our power to make that happen.
I absolutely agree. That resilience and optimism, all of that is in within each of us. If we could just bring that out, absolutely.
Thank you both ladies for joining us this evening and sharing your expertise and information. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Mental Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. Your producer is Renee Moran. Production assistance has been provided this evening by Kermit Poling. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.